Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Ian Tuttle of National Review, and for Jim Garrity today, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives as usual. And I think it was Wednesday, the very, very bad martini was the latest video release from the Center for Medical Progress. Not the fact that they released the video, but what the video contained. And that was essentially Planned Parenthood technicians cutting through the face of a baby whose heart was still beating so they could procure brain for research and profit. And that's certainly the allegation of the Center for Medical Progress. As a result, there are going to be major protests this weekend, some against Planned Parenthood, some in favor of Planned Parenthood. Some of those trying to defend Planned Parenthood are descending upon the governor's mansion in Louisiana. But Governor Bobby Jindal is one step ahead. He, as a result of anticipating those protesters, he has set up giant screens that will be playing the videos on loop. So these people who denounce the videos but refuse to watch them can actually see why everybody's so upset about them. We'll get to part two of the Good Martini in just a moment with Mia Love. But what do you make of the governor's move?
It's good. anything that brings more attention to these videos. I wrote earlier this week on the complete media blackout, and I'm, of course, not the first one to note this, but yesterday morning, 24 hours after the video was released, you had nothing on it from the New York Times, the Washington Post, the LA Times, the Chicago Tribune, CNN, ABC, NBC, CBS. Every major outlet wants to downplay the story, and this latest video should be the turning point, because you can debate as much as you want about abortion, about the status of the fetus in utero, et cetera, et cetera. That's not the accusation in this latest video. The accusation is outright on the table murder. This was a born-alive infant, allegedly, that Planned Parenthood killed. Under the law, that is a homicide. This should be the turning point. And so any Planned Parenthood defenders have to answer why they don't support the media reporting on a murder accusation or the government investigating. So anything that Bobby Jindal or others do to bring this story to light, I think, is a positive.
Also speaking out on this, Utah Republican Congresswoman Mia Love, she was on with Lou Dobbs on Fox Business, and he basically threw it to her in a general way. What do you make of these videos? And here was her response.
It's absolutely horrific. I get a little bit emotional just thinking about it and seeing what has happened. Here we are in the United States of America, and our job is to protect life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, first and foremost, life. And it's our job to protect those who do not have a voice, to protect themselves, and to see what is actually happening to babies while they're still alive. I mean, it's horrific. And this is not about a right or left issue. This is right or wrong. And whether we are going to stand up for those who cannot speak for themselves, or if we're going to just turn a blind eye and pretend that this is not happening.
Powerful point there about not being about left and right. It's about right and wrong. And Ian, oftentimes, and for good reason, we've been pretty critical in this podcast about the tactics of Republican leaders so far with the new majorities in the House and Senate. But with the exception of Elmer's going wobbly at the beginning of this term, the idea they have of putting women out front when it comes to pro-life causes, especially when they can be as articulate and passionate as Mia Love was right there, that is going to be very effective over time.
Yeah, I think that's right. And you'll remember Carly Fiorina a couple weeks ago turning the question around on, I think it was Jake Tapper, who right. looked just utterly shocked by the end of it. There are a lot of extraordinarily articulate women in the Republican caucus who have been making this case for a long time. And I think that's going to be very effective in the long run. And look, the more attention they bring to these videos, I mean, this is just a massive and powerful campaign behind the scenes of what Planned Parenthood's doing. And pro-life people know that this has been going on for a long time, but we're finally seeing a little bit of political muscle coalesce behind this effort, and I hope it sticks.
Interesting part later in the conversation was that she wasn't ready to say that the leadership was ready to go to the mat on this, and Mitch McConnell has said that it's unlikely that this will be an issue that stops the government from being funded later on this fall. So on to the bad martini now, and it deals with the media deciding that the term anchor baby is offensive. In fact, that's exactly what ABC reporter Tom, it's either Lamas or Yamas, said to Donald Trump in New Hampshire. And Trump, as you might expect, was not having any of it.
You said that you have a big heart and that you're not mean-spirited. Are you aware that the term anger-baiting, that's an offensive term. People find that hurtful.
You mean it's not politically correct and yet everybody uses it? So you know what? Give me a different term. What else would you like to say?
The American-born child is an undocumented immigrant.
You want me to say that? Okay, I said, no, I'll use the word anger-baby. Excuse me. I'll use the word anger-baby.
Interesting on a couple levels here. Even Jeb Bush defended his use of it. He asked for another term, and somebody gave him like a full sentence of how to refer to these type of children. And also interesting that the reporter didn't say some people consider this offensive. He just determined on his own that it is.
Yeah. Well, you know, everything that an ABC or whoever it was, reporter thinks is offensive, obviously. Everyone else thinks is offensive, too.
Yeah.
This is part of the larger movement to eliminate certain phrases, certain language in order to shape the debate. I commented on this on National Review's Corner, I think, last week. In regards to something slightly different, the aliens, I think, is the word that is now banned from the California Labor Code, according to California law now signed by Jerry Brown. All of this is simply an effort, not just to eliminate the word because it's offensive, quote unquote, but because it represents a concept that the left doesn't like, that is politically problematic for them. In large part, what all that this boils down to is an effort to narrow the grab bag of concepts that we have available to us in the realm of public discourse. You eliminate alien, you eliminate illegal, you eliminate anchor baby, and you leave anyone who wants to talk about those concepts with no way to express themselves. It's a form of silencing. While I am sure, this being America, that there are people who are offended by anchor baby, the fact is, if you were to eliminate that phrase, you still have to have a concrete phrase to talk about those people. A full sentence or a full paragraph is not reasonable in the realm of public discourse. I'd love to be generous to the people who do want to eliminate this. But most of the time, what you discover is it's really just an effort to narrow down the terms of the debate so that they can get their way. And that's a very dangerous impulse. And while Donald Trump is, of course, not the most rhetorically gentle human being, I think pushing back against that is beneficial in the long run.
Well, it's a perfect lead into our crazy martini. And John Leo, who has documented extreme political correctness on campus for many, many years, wrote yesterday for National Review Online, and he lists 10 things you didn't know were racist. We're not going to go through all 10, but let's just point out that some that made the list are Baba Black Sheep is racist, liking white meat is racist, calling it a brown bag lunch is racist. But the ones we're going to focus on here are ones that deal with policies on campus, because that's where the really impressionable minds are and the people who are going to be leading us, shudder, perish the thought, in the coming generations. MAs, Master of Arts, may be racist. According to Pearson College at Yale, he says that master in his title is severely upsetting some students and driving them off campus. He wants Pearson and Yale's 11 other residential colleges to have heads rather than masters. Hoop skirts are racist because they harken back to the antebellum days. That's the University of Georgia. The worst one of all here is the California, where complimenting America as open and fair is racially hurtful. Phrases like, I believe the most qualified person should get the job. America is the land of opportunity. America is a melting pot. Banned, because some students may regard those ideas as controversial. Henderson State University in Arkansas had to lift its ban on sagging pants because that was racist. And this is at Harvard. If too many white males are in your class, that's racist. Ian, there's already a lot of concern about where the millennial generation will take this country when they're the generation that's in charge. If this is their starting point, we don't really have much hope, do we?
No, we're doomed. What do you even say about this? Of course, it's the latest in a many-year trend, insane trends on the American campus. But I guess maybe one useful thing to point out is This fits very nicely into the cover story in The Atlantic currently. I don't know if you and Jim chatted about it, but by Greg Lukianoff, who's the head of FIRE, Foundation for Individual Rights and Education, a conservative organization, and Jonathan Haidt, a social psychologist. In their article, which is excellent, they make the case that this is not only sort of an issue of political correctness, it's an issue of mental health. And what you have, in effect, are huge numbers of students, the quote-unquote leaders of tomorrow, who are basically getting into mental patterns in which they refuse to be offended. They're so mentally fragile because of what they're allowing to happen or what they're forcing to happen on their campuses. Ultimately, that's going to be hugely detrimental to not just workplaces in the future, but to public discourse, which needs to be free, which needs to be the dynamic, which needs to be truly open dialogue if you want to advance any sort of common or public good. You simply can't have restrictions on what's possible because this or that group, hates hearing about the brown bag lunches that are going to be served at the meeting. I mean, this is extraordinarily dangerous from that perspective. And frankly, we're not going to look back and think that just the students were at fault, but the administrators, the faculty, et cetera, everyone who buckled to these demands is going to be culpable for a lot of damage in the future. No, I'm not saying anything new, but you just have to shake your head.
You do have to shake your head. And I want to thank you for pointing out that article. Jim and I did not talk about it, but it does remind me of something we did talk about in the Crazy Martini months ago. And I can't remember which Ivy League school it was, but they basically set up safe spaces for people who were unfortunately forced to hear an opinion they didn't agree with. And they had these rooms with bubbles and pillows and watching videos of puppies frolicking in a meadow and that sort of thing, just in case you actually encountered an opinion that wasn't the same as yours.
Yeah, what are we going to have? It's safe spaces at Goldman Sachs, or are there going to be safe rooms in the Capitol building for when a committee meeting gets a little testy? I mean, Christopher Buckley, Tom Wolfe, they're all shaking their heads too right now because they're glad they wrote their satire several years ago, because you can't parody these things.
This is why we got to get rid of the participation trophies. James Harrison is right, because that's what leads to this.
Absolutely.
Oh, Ian, as always, great to have you filling in for Jim. Have a wonderful weekend, and we'll talk to you later.
Thanks. Sounds good, Greg.
Ian Tuttle of National Review, in for Jim Garrity today. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Have a great weekend, everyone, and join Jim Garrity and me on Monday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.